For National Public Radio, this is Horizons.
وتلفتت عيني فمذ خفيت عني الطلول تلفت القلب.
My eyes turned back. The camp was no longer visible. My heart turned back.
The poetry of the Bedouins is part of the rich culture of this tribal people of the Middle East, desert nomads whose survival has always depended on herding. Until recently, national political boundaries never made much difference to the Bedouins. They wandered freely through the desert in search of good water and grazeland for their flocks, setting up goat hair tents where they found a good place and quietly waiting for nature or their tribal chief, the sheikh, to tell them when to move on. Along the way, they evolved a complex tribal culture of hospitality and loyalty, and an ability to flourish in an environment where most Americans see just endless sand. In the past 30 years, however, the national governments of the Middle East have been settling the Bedouins in fixed communities. This policy and the rapid growth of Western influence have transformed their tribal culture forever. For this edition of Horizons, Bedouin Nomads, Lifestyles and Changes, producer Adam Phillips went to Israel to explore their shrinking world.
At the animal market in Beersheba, a small biblical city nestled in the Negev desert of southern Israel, Bedouin Arabs in white headscarves and wrinkled faces haggle furiously over the price of goats and sheep, much as they have since Abraham's time. And much as they have since Abraham's time, the sheep are right in sensing that something is up. In this case, it's tomorrow's holiday. That's when each of these animals will be pinned to the ground with its neck facing Mecca and slaughtered for the traditional Muslim feast that marks Abraham's willingness to sacrifice his son at God's command. 50 years ago, most of the Bedouins at this market would have been nomadic desert herdsmen, buying and selling these sheep for meat and wool. Today, most Bedouins work in towns when they can get work, and the old way of life is disappearing.
You know what Bedouin means in Arabic? Badia means in Arabic desert, the people of the desert.
Sirhan Elitana is a Bedouin himself, and one of a growing number of university graduates. To him, Bedouins are still a people apart.
If you look to any Bedouin, no matter he's educated or not educated, you can see a culture thousands of years. Something in your eyes. The way he walk is something different. Freedom, movement. He didn't want anybody to tell him what to do. He have his own herd of sheep, his own camel, his own wife, his own children. This is his kingdom. And he didn't want anybody to interfere in his kingdom. Now, everything is lost.
Bedouins have always been known to adventurers and traders in the Middle East for their elaborate hospitality, their fierceness in war and revenge, and an ability to thrive in a silent desert world where water is almost as scarce as other human beings. Bedouin nomads also had a long tradition of storytelling, and were famous for their jet-black tents made of goat hair and their eerie courtship dancing. When Israel became a state in 1948, the new government hoped to turn the Negev desert where the Bedouins wandered into farmland. Since sheep and goats eat every green and leafy thing within reach, the state slapped severe limits on Bedouin grazing lands, much as other Middle Eastern nations would come to do. Proud herdsmen were forced to leave their tents and to settle in makeshift villages and towns, and to get jobs as unskilled laborers. Their children were sent to mandatory Western-style schools. This spelled the beginning of the end for traditional Bedouin life.
Sometimes when I see my father, when he was playing the music, the Bedouin music, he was very sad. Because this reminds him of the past. Bedouins respecting of each other, the tents and the horses and the camels and the beautiful days of his life. He can't live in this past. He just can't remember.
Sirhan's father is Sheikh Musa, the hereditary chief of the Elitana tribe. In the war of 1948, Most of Moose's tribe was scattered to neighboring countries. Out of 4,000 people, only 200 remained. Soon, the government evicted Moose's tribe from their traditional land near Gaza to make way for an air base and resettled them near Beersheba. They're still waiting for a permanent home with running water and electricity. Moose is an old man now. He remembers when his tribesmen went all out for the festival sacrifice. In those days, this feast meant a lot more than a busier-than-usual sheep market on Friday, followed by the tame banter between friends and family that most of us associate with Thanksgiving.
In the old time, the Bedouins, before the holiday come to them, they are singing and playing on the horses 2-3 weeks. Many happy.
Sheikh Moussa was educated in a special school for sheikhs run by the British when they still ruled Palestine. At that time, the tribal sheikh's word was absolute with his own people, and he in turn represented them to the authorities. After Israeli independence, the government began to assert its control, and sheikhs began to lose their clout and relevance. In the new lifestyle that was taking hold, tribal members simply found it more effective to go to the state for their needs.
My grandfather's father, I can't be as him. Every tribe in that time, it's the kingdom. In that old time, the sheikh, he must have power. He will be a high commissioner, the judge also. He will be a good leader to guide his family, his tribe, forever. He can govern as he like, freely. Now we are living in another way.
With the ongoing move to a settled life, tribes that had always been widely spread throughout the desert found themselves living close together in the towns. Before, if friction was in the air, it was easy simply to strike the family tent and move the herd someplace else. But in villages and cities, your home stays put, and you're stuck with the neighbors you've got. Sirhan was born to the settled life. For him, the age-old loyalties to family and tribe that the older generation imported from the desert are out of place in the towns.
The Bedouin is very fanatic to his tribe. I was talking with a Bedouin girl in the university in Beersheba. I just was talking to her, nothing more. I didn't kiss her, and I didn't want to kiss her, just to talk with her. And one of her cousins saw me. He went to her father and told him, and when her father heard about this, he hit her. It makes me feel very terrible.
Sheikh Moussa recognizes the mixed blessing of a settled life for what it is, but refuses to be sentimental.
The most of the people now are looking for a future, for education, for the vectors, for the cars. He will not return again for the old history. You have a car. Can I return you to leave the car and to use your leg or your horse or your camel as example? Impossible. Not a need. The youth of the Bedouins, they forget what happened for their father and grandfather.
Bedouin fathers and grandfathers had a lot to be proud of. Their poetry, for example, predates Muhammad by many hundreds of years and is still considered among the most beautiful in Arabic literature. Verses like this by Imrul Qais, the son of a king who is murdered by a poisoned cloak, are known to every educated Arab.
وَيَوْمًا عَلَى ظَهْرِ الْكَثِيبِ تَعَذَّرَتْ عَلَيَّ وَآلَتْ حَلْفَةً لَمْ تُحَلِّلِي.
Once, on the hill, she mocked me and swore, "This hour I leave thee to return no more. Soft, if farewell is planted in thy mind, yet spare me, Fatima, be not unkind. Because my passion slays me, wilt thou part? Because thy wish is low unto my heart? Nay, if thou so mislikest anything in me, shake loose my robe and let it fall free. But ah, that deadly pair, thy streaming eyes, they pierce a heart that all in ruin lies."
When the Bedouins were nomads, parents taught their children all they needed to know to sustain their life in the desert. Mothers taught their daughters how to bake bread in the embers of a campfire and how to weave, dye, and embroider cloth. Fathers taught sons how to predict the weather from the stars and the best way to heal a goat's broken bone. This system worked fine if you assumed that Bedouins would always live as they had. In the early 50s, though, it was clear to many traditional Bedouins that a Western-style education was the only path with a viable future for their kids.
I was born in a tent made from a goat hair, 9 sisters and 2 brothers. It was kind of fun.
Ismael Abu Saad holds a doctorate in education from the University of Minnesota, a good 7,000 miles from the tent where he grew up. Abu Saad is one of the very few Bedouins to hold a graduate degree. His parents believed that education would be his only passport to a better life.
My mother and father were very supportive. They see things are changing around them. So the only way of dealing with this transition is prepare the new generation to be ready.
Making the trek to and from school every morning was an adventure in itself for Abu Saad, albeit a bumpy one.
I used to ride a donkey with my cousin, you know, we shared one donkey. It was fun. For the first time in my life, I was seeing cars, you know, seeing buses. I was kind of excited. I would like to ride in this machine. And my dad, you know, he didn't really care about my excitement more than he cared about my education.
Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar! Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah.
One route Bedouin parents can choose for their children is a rigorous Islamic education. Bedouins took to Islam almost from the beginning and were largely responsible for spreading the religion. Until recently, however, most Bedouins have worn the religion lightly. But now that their culture has been disrupted, many have come to embrace the Quran for their children as the one steady rock in their heritage. The first thing one sees when one drives into a Bedouin town is a brand new mosque.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Iza waqa'atil waqi'ah.
In a mosque, a boy learns how to chant the Quran in the Egyptian style.
Iza rujjatil ardu rajja wa bussatil jibalu bassa.
For many traditional families, however, the fruits of a Western education for their kids are bittersweet because their children come home with values and ideas that clash with the way they had been raised. This sometimes leads to conflict between the generations that was unknown in the past. Sirhan Elitaune.
Many parents, and most of them, don't agree with their sons and their thinkings. Fathers want their sons to be like the traditional way, to hear everything they say to their sons. But now some educated young Bedouins wants to be in different life, you know, to live in different style, to see the world. So maybe he didn't have enough courage to say to his father no. But now they all get this courage to say no.
One thing Sirhan says no to are the arranged marriages that are still fairly common among the Bedouins.
The old way, I hate it, to marry a woman just because the people told me that this is a good girl. This is not satisfying me. I want to know the woman that I am going to marry with her.
What do you look for in a wife?
I look for a wife to be educated, like me, and to be beautiful. Not so beautiful. Something that I can accept. I want her to be nice and not to be stubborn.
Do you think that the man and woman in a marriage should be equals?
I want understanding between the wife and the husband. Not the husband to control the wife. Educated Bedouin like me don't agree with this. The women, they have to get more rights than they got today.
تبدت لنا كالشمس تحت غمامة.
Like the sun surrounded by clouds, she showed a part of her face and covered a part.
Bedouin attitudes towards women remain strongly traditional. Unmarried women wear blue embroidery, the color of loneliness, on the hem of their skirts. And when they marry, the color changes to red for blood and passion. Throughout married life, women are expected to cover their face and to stay out of sight. For this reason, it was impossible to get a Bedouin woman to give an interview about her life. But Galit Ben-Gal, an Israeli expert from the Museum of Bedouin Culture, knows their ways.
The Bedouin woman is very, very protected from society. The reason why they are wearing black and why they're covering their faces, it's to protect the woman against evil eye and men. I guess it's sometimes the same.
Galit says that she is treated exactly like a man by her Bedouin employees, most of whom have never met a woman in authority before. Bedouin women are generally given only the barest education allowed by law. Only an estimated 100 Bedouin women work outside the home, way less than 1%. Still, Galit believes that modern ideas are slowly beginning to have an effect on the Bedouin women, just as they have the menfolk.
They are not protected as much as they were. They cannot be, because it's inside the house now. The women are watching television, they see Dynasty, right? They see that a woman can drive a car, and she doesn't need to have 12 kids, she can have only 2 or 3, and she doesn't have to obey that much. And I heard a funny story. One of the Bedouin told me, women are not like they used to be, because he asked her to help him plow the land, and she said, go buy yourself a harvester. And he said, how can that be? How could she be so bad and mean to tell me this thing? They don't want to help anymore? What kind of a creature is that?
One purely Western value that is seeping into Bedouin culture is the idea that material wealth is a measure of personal character and value. This attitude is confusing to many Bedouin men. On the one hand, they feel humiliated by the low status they get from Israelis for their jobs as cabbies and street sweepers. On the other hand, they gain prestige within their own communities for the money they make. Ismail Rezek invites me into his hut. He speaks through a translator.
The most important aspect that changed is that in the past, each individual man and person was valued. Today, people get more respect through capital than for his personality. Not everything in life is money.
Jealousy over money and material wealth is a powerful theme among the Bedouins. This is borne out by the words of a Bedouin folk version to a recent Egyptian pop song.
The rich eat beans and butter for breakfast, while the poor feast on beans that a donkey would not eat. The rich live in an elegant street and has a radio and a glittering light. The poor dwells in a ruin with giant ghosts. The rich, he sighs twice, and at once two doctors appear at his side. While the poor, when he sighs twice, at his side at once appears the angel of death. The rich dies in grace, and crowds go to his funeral. And the poor, when he dies, makes his family glad. There is one less to feed.
It's sad because it's not people that wanted this change, or at least not all of them wanted this change, and they were not ready for this change, I think.
Galit Ben-Gal of the Museum of Bedouin Culture.
Their spirit is so much free and so much of going outside and making living out of going after the herd and living in nature. Putting a person like that, that used to have the wind all around in the house, it's sad. I don't think they will be able ever to go back being nomads. Even now, kids, Bedouin kids that are coming to this museum, to the Museum of Bedouin Culture, they don't know this culture anymore. They don't know the black tent. They have tents next to the house, but those are hospitality tents, only for wedding parties or for circumcising parties. But, you know, it's not a living tent.
The Bedouin Museum that Galit runs is so realistic that old Bedouin men who've casually wandered by have curled up on the embroidered blankets inside the tent exhibits and fallen asleep. The authenticity of the place certainly gives Galit pride, but the very need for the place gives her a sadness as well.
It's a culture that disappears, and we have a nice place to demonstrate it, how it was when it was a living culture. And there's nothing we can do about it. We cannot keep people out of modernization, because I think modernization eventually is good. When you have two societies, that one is already modern and another society that is primitive, the modern will force the primitive to become modern. And modernization is painful.
الماء في ناظري والنار في كبدي.
The night drags on. I think that dawn, the shepherd of the stars, will never return.
تطاول حتى قلت ليس بمنقض.
There is water in my eyes and fire in my heart. Do you want a drink or a spark?
The words primitive and modern are relative terms. Today, many modern Israelis are drawn to the pockets of traditional Bedouin life that remain.
I have a lot of respect to them. If somebody that comes from our Western civilization and say, oh, they are primitive. No, they have their very clever knowledge. I study a lot from them.
Sefi Hanegbi is an Israeli who lives a simple life with his family on a remote hill in the Negev, far from any town. When he settled there, he quickly befriended the Bedouin locals, who taught him the skills he needs for a Bedouin-style camel trekking business he conducts mostly for Israelis. Sefi is grateful for what the Bedouins have taught him.
I learned from the Bedouins three things, most important things. The medicine, herb medicine in the desert, it's from the woman, and, of course, the camels, how to use them, how to educate them, and how to take care of them. I learned from them the way how to take time sitting and to enjoy from sitting. And you have all the time of the world to talk with them. The tent always open to you. And it was quiet, you can cut the air. And you hear only the voice of the spark of the fire. So I studied from them. I appreciate it.
Abraham is quite the point at this Islamic sermon at sunrise on the morning of the ritual sheep sacrifice here in Rahat, a Bedouin settlement of 7,000 people. Jews and Arabs both trace their lineage to Abraham. The Arabs through Abraham's older son, Ishmael. The Jews through his other son, Isaac. The story goes that God ordered Abraham, a Bedouin himself, to build an altar and to sacrifice his son upon it. But God saved the boy at the last moment by putting a ram in his place. As a reward for his obedience, God promised Abraham and his descendants what is now the land of Israel as an inheritance. But which son did Abraham try to sacrifice? Ishmael or Isaac? The Jews say it was Isaac whom Abraham brought to the altar, and that they therefore have the God-given right to the land. The Arabs say it was Ishmael, and that they are the ones who should be there. Fundamentalists of the West Bank and the other Arab countries push the Arab argument to incite the Bedouins as a way to garner help in their ongoing war with the Jews. Just as their roots to Islam have deepened, Bedouin ties to the Palestinians have strengthened, a new and worrying development for the Israeli authorities. With the Bedouins, as with the Palestinians, most of the anger comes down to a single source, land. Sheikh Musa.
Where we our land? We lost our land. The Israel government had a big appetite to swallow all the land. You know, not to eat, to swallow. But we hope. We will not forget our hope. We are learned from the camel how to be patient.
For all his frustration with the Israelis, Sheikh Musa wants peace.
Let us to find in a settlement for this problem. Well, until now, we did not arrive for this aim. But if in future, I think we can arrive at it. Put in the ground the hatred between them, for a good way for the peace, not for a war.
It's time for the Abu Ghia family to slaughter their sheep in the ancient way. Young Ali has brought his shy young wife. A grandfather in an immaculate white robe finishes honing a razor-sharp knife.
Be afraid.
I don't blame him.
The sheep is pinned to the ground, and in a moment, the age-old sacrifice is reenacted.
I take one. Ah! Ah!
It takes only 20 minutes to flay and cut the animal, desert style, on the ground below the makeshift house that this family hopes will one day be made permanent.
He now take the skin off.
Half hour you eat this.
Huh?
The Bedouins say that only a porcupine can afford to sit with its back to the door of the tent, because its sharp quills will keep it protected from the outside. But the Bedouins have not protected themselves as modern life enters their world. Yet even with all the Western education and the factory jobs, Sirhan Elitana believes that the perfume of the open spaces will always be a subtle presence in their way of life.
My dream that the Bedouins become more modern people, and besides, from the other side, they keep the unique things that make them Bedouins. I don't want to forget the past. Respecting the guests, their special coffee, the love to each other, the pictures of my grandfathers. These important things, I don't want to forget, even if I don't agree with some of them. I have to say the truth to myself and to other people. I was born here, even if I live in Europe. If I go to Canada and sit with you there, I will never forget that I am Bedouin. The Bedouin always believe that he belongs to the desert.
The Nomadic Bedouins, Lifestyles and Changes, was produced by Adam Phillips. Special thanks to Ghanem Dijani, Shamim Rassam, and Michael and Nadine Epstein. Field recordings by Nahida Fadli Dijani. I'm Sora Newman. Senior producer for the Horizon series is Donna Limerick. The series is produced by NPR's News and Information Department. This is NPR, National Public Radio.